This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Are you going to need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a grand opening celebration, a memory play in search of identity, or an outrageous comedy, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The historic New Orleans Collection is celebrating the grand opening of its third campus with the renovation of the historic Signore Brulatour building at 520 Royal Street and a multi-million dollar exhibition center opening with the collection's first major exhibit of contemporary art. It's called Art of the City, Postmodern to Post-Katrina, presented by the Hellas Foundation. Artist and curator Jan Gilbert is here. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you for having me.
This is a significant event for the Historic New Orleans Collection, as three decades of contemporary art now fill the walls of a massive exhibition space, an inaugural exhibit of contemporary art that you have curated. No pressure, right?
Yes. Yes, curated. I have collaborated with staff, with Priscilla Lawrence, particularly assisting the director.
So give us a feel for this much-anticipated new gallery.
Well, it is stunning. Contemporary, high-ceilinged, lots of glass, just really a very special space for the French Quarter. We have a lot of art. It's 61 artists with 75 artworks, plus 11 artists' artworks that are public artworks that aren't exactly included in the catalog per se, but are integral to the exhibition. I drew particularly from the collection itself as the first wave. Their collection, of course, is extensive. And so the richness of the city and so many artists now who have developed and are thriving in this place made it very difficult.
I'll bet.
Really. I probably could have curated five of these shows and been happy.
Now, I hear the exhibit occupies 8,000 square feet?
It is. 8,000 square feet of new exhibition walls for the quarter in the city.
Three gallery spaces?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
You're covering which three decades? What's the focus?
So we begin with the World's Fair, roughly 1984. We felt that was a marker. You know, it created a real impression on artists here, I think. I mean, on the public in general. But it was a catalyst with lots of physical changes to the city and new institutions that have flourished. And so it was a nice opportunity not to just look at the single moment right now, but to give a little bit of history of when this kind of movement really came to fruition. You know, it was really nice to not have to try to put just the newest and coolest work, but to actually be able to honor some of the people who were the forerunners that have made this moment happen. So several of the people in the show are no longer with us, but their work remains.
Take us through. What will visitors experience?
Oh, my goodness. First of all, you know, this is part of a much larger expansion. So there is, in front of the building, the older part of the building has been renovated. But the back part of the building, this wing, is new construction and is three floors. So you go up these massive elevators up to the third floor, which is the beginning of the exhibition. And you're in a corridor gallery, and it's flanked by two large exhibition spaces. Generally speaking, there is painting, there is photography, as well as sculpture. As a public artist myself, I really wanted to make sure that if we're talking about kind of the urban landscape of New Orleans, I wanted to make sure that somehow people were out in the landscape and understood all of the public art that has been happening in these three decades here. So we have a large map that goes down on the first floor of the exhibition. It's huge. It fills this 60-foot wall. And it's also with a small hand map that visitors can take with them of some past and present public art. Because being in a history context, there were some items that we really wanted to go back and make sure people remembered.
For example?
Well, at the World's Fair, there was an amphitheater that many people, myself included, you know, as a native New Orleanian who went to the World's Fair, I did not know that the amphitheater was created by Frank Gehry, the very famous architect, who at that time was not a very famous architect. And sadly, it was intended from the beginning to be demolished. And so it doesn't remain. And it really was an important piece of architecture and history, and also very contemporary in its spirit. So we honor it on our map, and we have a couple of artists who had taken images. So we have those in the exhibition.
Wow. You talk about your work as a public artist. Are there any pieces by you?
Well, I don't consider myself part of the exhibition, but I was invited to include a piece that's actually in this gorgeous stairwell, if you can imagine. You know, it's adjacent to the where you enter the show, and it's a very large wall, and it's a piece called Threshold, and it actually embodies the spirit of what I think the show is about, which is how to see a place freshly, how to look and relook with others' eyes, to take the time to step back. To me, it did seem appropriate, and I'm very excited to have it there.
Is this a photograph?
It is a mixed multimedia photograph that's part of a much larger body of work. It's about 8 feet.
About
wide.
8 feet?
Yes.
This
yes.
is pretty big.
Yes.
Wow.
So that's what I'm saying. In the stairwell, that gives you a little bit of an idea.
Yeah. This used to be the old WDSU TV
yes.
studio.
Yes. This is the Tricentennial Wing, which resides a bit behind. Goes through to Charter Street in the back.
Tell us more about some of the established masters and newcomers in the show.
One great example is John Scott. John was such a mentor to so many of us. He taught at Xavier, and we both honor one of his street installations, which is called Spirit House at DeSay Circle. That's on the public art map, but we also have a very beautiful large woodcut print that actually was done pre-Katrina in about 2002. It's very prescient. When people look at this image, it's actually on the back cover of our catalog. When people look at it, you think it is a post-Katrina image, but it actually was for planning the urban renewal, a blues poem image. Lynn Emery has a piece, the octet, that we have the beautiful moving model, and it's also referenced on the map where on Poydras Street, the corridor, you can see this. We have a very new exciting piece by Elizabeth Catlett, who was a 93-year-old African-American woman artist working in the trenches. And when I heard about this piece, I was afraid it wasn't within the time frame because of her age, but it actually was fabricated in 2010 to 12-ish. And this is a piece that's a model of Mahalia Jackson, and it's this public sculpture that resides in Congo Square. So this is a very exciting new addition, and it was really the last piece we added to the show.
Now, is there a common thread between the decades that's being explored?
Well, in the postmodern sense of multiplicity, multiculturalism, just many varied voices. That's how I feel, and I'm excited that actually our bios and statements of the artists whenever possible, if they were alive, they gave us little cues about themselves and about their statements. And that is a very rich layer to the show. It informs the quirkiness, you know, and kind of idiosyncrasy of New Orleans.
How are you hoping, Jen, visitors will connect with this artistic timeline of our city?
Honestly, the word awe kind of pops into my mind because it's awesome. The show is not done in any chronology. It really is intended to feel like you're walking in the city. You know how time here takes on a very kind of circular, nothing is point A to B to C. It's all over. And so, you know, I wanted to replicate that sense. I did not want the Katrina and post-Katrina works to be segregated in any way. They're not, that those feelings are here. They're so entwined with what our experience of the city is and continues to be.
Artist and curator Jen Gilbert, thanks so much for sharing your time with me.
Thank you, Diane.
Three decades of contemporary art come to life in the exhibit Art of the City, Postmodern to Post-Katrina, presented by the Hellis Foundation, as the Historic New Orleans Collection celebrates the opening of its third campus at 520 Royal Street. The exhibit opens April 6th and will be on view through October 6th. There is a block party Sunday, April 7th. All events are admission free. Family secrets come to light as Southern Rep Theater presents the world premiere of award-winning playwright Christina Quintanas Azul. The New Orleans native, who now resides in New York, takes audiences on a journey spanning two countries and three generations in a search for identity. The work is directed by Estefania Fadul. Christina and Estefania are here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
Christina, this is a work that's dedicated to your Cuban roots. How did it come about?
It's a play I've been really trying to write for a long time. I keep saying that it's sort of my family play without being my family play, because there's nothing actually that's really, truly, directly autobiographical about the play. But both of my parents were Cuban born. And, you know, growing up as a Cuban American, a lot of the questions that sort of happen within the play are really a lot of questions that I've had, a lot of conversations that I've had. The real beginning of this actual play was at the Latino Theater Commons at the Carnival in 2015, I believe it was. And I was having a conversation with an actor friend, and I was kind of realizing that I felt like a lot of the plays were really male-centric. And I wanted to see more Latinas, honestly, on stage. But it comes from a lot of very personal places.
Estefania, what attracted you to this work?
I'd met Christina a little while before I read the play, and I feel like we had just hit it off. And then I read the play, and I think for me, one of the big storylines is just the search for identity as a Latinx person in the U.S. There were so many things I connected to. In the first scene of the play, there's a song that I grew up listening to, and I grew up in Colombia until I was 5 and then moved to the U.S. It's a Christmas song that a lot of people know throughout Latin America. It brought me right into that situation and that play and the story for these characters. And I just felt like it's very rare to have these stories that kind of track through the specific experience of a Latinx person in the U.S. It's not specifically an immigration story. It is part of it, but it's not the only focus of it. I was drawn to that. I was drawn to the characters.
Let's begin with the title, Azul. What does it refer to?
The name, it means blue. I think blue tracks in the play in a lot of very different ways. You know, obviously there's, you know, blue is in sadness. There's blue, like, you know, the water and the sky. It's just like a central kernel of the play.
So what's the storyline?
So the play basically follows this woman named Zelia, who is a Cuban-American woman. Her mother was Cuban-born, and her mother develops early-onset Alzheimer's. And when her mom develops early-onset Alzheimer's, she can no longer speak English, and she never taught her daughter Spanish. Actually, she recognizes her daughter's partner as her tía nena, who was her aunt, who basically was like a mother to her and stayed in Cuba after the revolution. And so basically it is a memory play that sort of tracks Zelia on this journey, trying to figure out, like, really connect with her identity and what is her identity and what is her legacy, you know, in the wake of the loss of her mother. So she finds out that her tía nena, who stayed in Cuba after the revolution, her mother's aunt, with her tía abuela, which is her great aunt, stayed in Cuba after the revolution because she was gay and she was in love with another woman. While she had passed, basically, Zelia is interested to see whether this other woman is still in Cuba. She goes to Cuba to sort of see if she can find her and get answers.
This is a multi-layered journey.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Estefania, How do you bring the characters to life?
We have an amazing cast that we're working with. It's a cast of 3, and they're all playing 2 roles, so they're all doubling. All of them have such personal connections to these characters and to many of these situations that they are able to also draw on a lot of their own personal experiences as they start filling out these characters. We have a scene here between Yadra, who's the mother, who has Alzheimer's, and Zelia, her daughter. They're in their kitchen in New York, and it's a moment when Zelia is trying to convince Yadra to go visit Cuba with her, and Yadra is not having it. What about your tía Nina? You just said she was basically your mom.
My mother died when I was a baby.
I know, but don't you want to see Nina before she dies?
That's enough. She's very sick. She probably won't make it through the month.
You can memorialize her.
I can do that here.
But you can't show me where you were born here.
Get the computer. I'll Google it for you. If I take a trip, I want to take a real trip. Somewhere far away from memory.
Where would you like to go?
England. You know I love the way they talk. We'll take a nice little holiday. I wish my accent sounded more like theirs. Who knows? Maybe I'll find myself a nice British enamorado. A younger man. What would you think of that?
Scandalous. We could do both. England, then Cuba, skip between islands. What do you say?
I'll think about it.
It's quite a journey.
There's an amazing design team who helps bring them to life with, you know, the costumes is a huge part of it, especially because the actors are doubling. Ellen Bull, our costume designer, has been really instrumental in helping those transitions happen.
Now, the production features music by New Orleans singer-songwriter Sarah Quintana. Are you related?
No, we're not. But, you know, it's so funny because I told her this. I remember seeing her perform when I was, I guess I must have been in high school, in old Algiers. So I've known about her for a long time. And the cool thing was I was doing a residency in New Hampshire, and another New Orleans-based artist actually recommended that we work together. And then sort of it's kind of this interesting full circle. We're not related, though.
What would you say is the universal message that will speak to audiences as they follow you on this journey?
I mean, I think there's a great line at the end of the play that's, it's when Zelia has arrived in Cuba and has discovered certain things about her family and about how the people around her family reacted to some of them. What do people know about a life except the ones who lived it?
Yeah.
And I think that's a big message in this play in terms of ultimately everyone has such a distinct path and so many ways that they intersect in their own identities or in the choices they made in their lives, and that ultimately only you're responsible for your own life. And I think that just a sense of not judging other people's choices or other people's lifestyles is a huge part of it.
Playwright Christina Quintana and director Estefania Fadul. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
Christina Quintana's Azul is currently running at Southern Rep Theater, 2541 Bayou Road, with performances through April 14th. More info at southernrep.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNN, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Now, across town, playwright Jonathan Tollin's hit off-Broadway comedy Buyer and Seller makes its New Orleans debut, starring Greg Cada. The one-man play, presented by Tulane's Newcomb Department of Music, finds an out-of-work actor scoring the oddest of jobs with a renowned diva. Big Easy Award-winning director Michael McKelvey is here with Greg Cada. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us, yes.
This solo performance has enjoyed sold-out runs coast to coast. What's the draw?
I think, first of all, it's the lady. It's Barbara Streisand and all the mystique surrounding her. And then the premise of the show itself is kind of out of this world.
And how did you come to choose it?
Well, that's really Greg came to choose it. So I'll let him tell that.
Yeah, I had seen the show and just read it. And it was one of those things that I said, this is something I'd love to do. I've wanted to do this for almost like 6 years now when it first came out. And this was the right time.
Yeah. How did we get so lucky to have you in this performance?
Oh, well, I am finishing up my master's at Tulane in musical theater, and part of my degree I have to perform. And so this sort of was kismet. It just worked out perfectly because it is a one-man show and I am a one-man program. And this show is just so funny.
Tell us about some of your professional credits.
Well, I came here from Las Vegas, where I was living for a long time. My probably biggest show was Mamma Mia, which brought me to Vegas and then on the road as well.
So what makes this comedy, Buyer and Seller, and Seller is spelled C-E-L-L-A-R, what makes it so outrageous? What's the storyline?
The premise is basically Barbara Streisand has written this book on design, which she's actually written a book on design. And in the book, she kind of tells of her aesthetic and things. And we come to learn that Barbara has built her own shopping mall in the basement of her Malibu home. Yes.
Which is real.
Which is real.
Yes.
That's what makes this so funny. Like, you can't make this up. No one could come up with the premise of, well, if I had a house big enough to build a shopping mall in the bottom half of it, I mean, who would think of that? And the reason why is Barbara has a lot of stuff and she needs a place to keep her stuff. But then she needs someone to maintain the shops or shoppies in the mall. And that's where Greg's character comes in.
And Greg, your character is Alex. Tell us about the character and what you bring to the role. Or maybe I should say roles. Do you take on several characters?
Yes. Alex is a struggling actor in L.A. You know, he's just one of those people just trying to make it in a business and seeing where he fits in. And through connections of his career, he gets this job in Barbara's basement. And what spoke to me about Alex was his just good nature. He really does believe that there is good in everybody. He doesn't want to be a cynical person in a cynical world. I mean, to be a gay man in Los Angeles, that can be pretty cynical and dark sometimes. So he's just got a good attitude about life. He's worked jobs that some people would look down on. I mean, he was, you know, he worked at Disneyland, you know, as opposed to being in the movies. But, you know, he was making money. You got to make ends meet. So I really love his optimism, which is hysterical. Because, yes, I do take on about 7 different characters in the show. It's less about actually sort of transforming into them as much as about kind of being the essence of them. There's no costume changes. It's not like I'll do a monologue as one person. I actually have the conversations as these 7 different characters interact together. But it's really just about taking on their essences. So it's great because it really does stretch you as a performer, because I have to find places in me, you know, that are so vastly different. And yes, I do take on Barbara Streisand as well. But I will say I don't do an impression. I think that's very important because I don't think I would be very good at that, but I take on her essence, which is very fun to do. So, memories light the corners of my mind. Of course, the brain is basically round, so technically it has no corners. That is, if you're going by the first definition of corner in the dictionary, where two lines or edges meet to form an angle, which is what one generally thinks of when hearing the word corner. No, the metaphor only really works on the 5th definition, a remote, secluded, or secret place, which is probably what it means, and what she wanted. Now, before I tell you the story, we gotta get a couple things straight. First, this is a work of fiction, right? You know that. I mean, the premise is preposterous. What I'm about to tell you could not have possibly happened with a person as famous, talented, and litigious as Barbara Streisand. This isn't journalism. There will be no excerpts on This American Life. I'm an actor. Perhaps you know my work. And this is a play written by a guy named John who only met her once. She had come to another play of his that he had written, and before it started, she offered him a piece of her Kit Kat bar. And to this day, he regrets not taking it. He didn't want to make a mess. But enough about him. Nobody cares. Second thing is, I don't do her. Enough people do her anyway, even some women, that you don't need me to. So when I tell you of the conversations that we had that never really took place, I'll just be her, and you can fill in the rest.
Very nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Michael is director. How do you help Greg to bring out the essence of the other characters?
My job, I think at times, to be more of a referee. between these characters and saying, okay, that one's too close to the line, and let's go back and look at it again.
It's definitely a guiding hand for sure, but he's definitely the eye of it because I can't tell half the time where I'm looking because I have a little bit of a schizophrenia sometimes because there's so many people in my head.
I mean, Greg has 90 minutes of material. It's him, top to bottom, 90 minutes. So, and he just goes. I mean, that's one of the things we were talking about, the length of the show. It doesn't feel like 90 minutes. It's storytelling, and Greg's a great storyteller.
So what are the themes being explored in the work?
Over the whole play, Alex is realizing a little bit the price of fame, you know, what you give up as someone who has everything and has all of that. That is sort of sad, but also you can sort of see a little bit what celebrity does to someone and sort of how they're always trying to keep up with the Joneses. I mean, there's a whole exchange between Barbara and Oprah, you know, and he says it's just two old friends with enormous coastal houses comparing notes. You know, it's so unrelatable, but it's so hilarious. And so it definitely explores, I think, relationships, but I think it really just is a little bit about celebrity, obsession with it, and realism, you know, real relationships. You know, you see him and Barbara becoming closer, but, you know, very different ideas of what that relationship is.
What do you think will be most memorable from this performance?
So you get to see Barbara at home. So it's Barbara with some frozen yogurt. It's Barbara talking about throw pillows. It's Barbara talking about things that we all deal with, but it's her. And so that makes it even more hilarious, but also more relatable. So if you aren't a Barbara fan, which, you know, all five of you out there, you know, you still get just as much enjoyment out of watching this person that is so infamous and larger than life doing these very mundane everyday things like, you know, talking about shopping and haggling prices. So it's really fun.
Even just her trying to pick out a gift for her house guest for the evening, Barbara Boxer.
Right.
Just her struggling over this. And that's just the amazement as she go through her own goods in her shops in her mall, what to pick out for this dinner guest for the evening. It's quite charming.
Yeah.
Director Michael McKelvey and actor Greg Cada, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks so much, Diane.
People who need people.
Buyer and Seller by award-winning playwright Jonathan Tollens runs April 4th, 5th, and 7th at the Theater Lab in the McWilliams Theater and Dance Building at Tulane University. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next week when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.